This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Getting your affairs in order in case of death or disability is a project most of us would rather avoid. There are lots of excuses for not doing it, from fear to lack of time and money. But the payoffs of letting your wishes be known can be huge, especially for family and friends. Joining us to talk about end-of-life financial planning are certified public accountant Rebecca Pace, managing member of RPACE Tax Service, and Chris DeSimeo, a financial advisor with Wells Fargo Advisors in Cincinnati. You can join us 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Rebecca, good afternoon. Good to see you.
Good afternoon. It's great to be here.
And Chris, good to see you too.
It's always a pleasure to be here, Mark.
Rebecca, this is interesting because you actually created a workbook for for your clients, because I guess a lot of them must have been coming to you with questions about this very topic. How do I do this? How do I get started? What do I do?
I did have a good friend come to me. She's in her mid-70s, and her children are out of town, and she came to me specifically for this. Wanted me to help her get organized so she could provide information to her children. But it's useful for people preparing for disability or even just going out of town on vacation. So there are so many uses for this information.
So this covers a wide range of things, a broad area from the everyday to the more serious, I take it.
Yes, yes. You're going to go to your attorney for your will, but there is so much more involved here. It's just not that one document.
Mm-hmm. Chris, I take it you see a lot of this too with your clients?
We do. We do. Frequently, it shows up when someone walks into our office or we get a phone call that says, you know, mom and dad passed away 5 or 6 years ago, and I got this letter from this company that says that we have unclaimed funds somewhere. And it's a share of stock I didn't know mom and dad owned, and it's still in their name, and no one knows where it is, and it's the technical term for it is a mess.
That's true.
That's the technical term for it.
And you know, when I think about my own situation, I think I'm fairly organized, but then I go back and I think, you know, I have stuff all over the place, and I'm not sure that if I didn't lay this out somewhere, that anybody would know where to look in the first place.
Yeah, and you know, if you've been online any time in the last 20 years, certainly since I guess Google's been around about 20 years now, if you've looked at that, people say, well, have you Googled yourself? You can forget about that for just a minute and go to Google unclaimed funds plus whatever state you think you may have lived in or had any business in, and see if there's money that's been sent back to the state in which you live or lived, because whoever owes that money to you couldn't find you because you may have moved and you didn't tell everybody that you'd moved. And we get this all the time. A lot of people had health insurance with a mutual insurance company such as Blue Cross, which has gone through several iterations, or a life insurance policy with a company. Back 20 years ago, a lot of these life insurance companies went from being owned by the policyholders to being owned by shareholders. And so people who had little life insurance policies that grandma and grandpa got for them 50 years ago ended up getting shares of stock. And no one knows where all this, you know, a lot of times people just left the shares at the transfer agent. And so someone passes away, the transfer agent doesn't know who these people are or what's happened. So you just have to, it's a good idea for grandmothers and grandfathers or moms and dads to sit down with their kids and have a conversation about where everything is. Just, you know, don't tell them, you don't have to tell them how much it is, but where everything is, just to make that transition a lot easier.
Mm-hmm. Yes. In my workbook, I have 4 essential pages that basically are a list of all these documents, all this information you're going to need, and where can we find that information. Those 4 essential pages are free for download from my website. So you don't need the entire book if you just want those pages. Listing all the documents and asking some questions like, who has keys to your house? Who feeds your dog? Who cuts your grass? What's the phone number? So this is not, as I said, it's not just end of life. there are many other times when this information is going to be useful.
And that's how this differs from estate planning, too, because
yes.
this covers such a lot of different areas.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
We have a link to your website at wvxu.org. So if people want to go there and take a look at this, they can. This can be tough for people to do. We're talking about some everyday things, but we're also talking about considering, what happens if I become disabled.
Yes.
What happens if I die? So this is tough for people sometimes to think about. How do you motivate people to do this kind of planning? I mean, how do you explain to them that there are a lot of benefits to doing this?
Usually the motivation comes when a friend or neighbor has an incident. Either the ambulance comes, somebody goes to the hospital, or a good friend dies. That's often the motivation. But we also see it around this time of year when families are getting together and children come in from out of town to see mom and dad and go, oh my, things are different here. They're showing their age. We need to have a conversation. So that seems to be a real key motivator. We do see that around this time of year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's hard, too. You just can't sit around the dinner table and say, by the way, pass the gravy. And by the way, have you set up your powers of attorney? You have to be delicate sometimes in how you kind of cue this up or tee it up.
Yeah.
What are some of the things that over the years in your practice that you have found to be very helpful in terms of kind of making it easier for that conversation, that sometimes challenging conversation, to happen?
Well, there's sort of been two ways. One is through my church, my pastor occasionally will have an evening program or a discussion or a sermon topic that brings up some of these issues, and you can capitalize on that. The other thing is really a personal story. A child who's worried about mom and dad can talk about a colleague at work who had a problem with their parents, or a child or another situation, something even in the news. That will help break the ice, and you can see how far that can go. It's a much easier conversation than the conversation that's when it's time to take away the car keys. It's not that kind of a final conversation. It's more of a general, where are things? What would I do? Where would I find things? Who would I call if you have a fall? Who would you want me to call to water the plants or take care of the dog? And that can break the ice.
So sometimes then what you're saying is keeping the conversation away from, hey, mom and dad, how much money do you have?
Yes.
To where everything is, and just in case someone needs help.
Exactly. That's the place to start.
Well, that brings up an interesting point, too, because some people might make the argument, I don't have enough money to even concern myself with laying out a plan like this. But that's not the case. I mean, this is not just about money.
Absolutely. Yes. It's not about money. It's really about quality of life and family traditions. I know in my own family, there were a lot of things that had been passed on from generation to generation. And to know the stories behind those things was really important to me. But to one of my sisters, that wasn't so important. And it would have been very helpful to have more of a conversation with my parents about this before we had to make decisions.
Yeah. So many times when you're cleaning out your attic or cleaning out someone else's attic and you're going through boxes of stuff, you have to ask, why was this saved and not thrown out? It must have been important to somebody, unless they're just a pack rat by
yes.
nature, and some people are. But
yeah.
frequently there's a reason something was saved. So you have to ask. It's easier to tell someone what's in that box, label the box, what's in there,
yes.
what's important and why it's important, and then have a discussion with whoever might be opening that box 10, 20 years later, what that is, so they can – or leave instructions with,
yes.
with them.
Yeah.
And how much of a stress reliever is this for families, for your family and loved ones to do this?
Oh, it makes a difference between whether the children will speak to one another after the funeral or not, really. It's a huge issue.
It can be. It really can be. Especially when you have families that have dispersed because you have mom and dad live in Cincinnati, but you've got children
the kids live on the coasts.
Both coasts. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, so there's sometimes there's the home court advantage from the person as basketball season unfolds of the one who is closer. So there's that to deal with. And the person who has been closer might feel more entitled to other things because, well, I've been doing all the heavy lifting here, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So there's that. Also, there's another issue if you have blended families.
Absolutely.
Because then what's, you know, it's important to get that on the table ahead of time. And we've run into this in our practice frequently, and most people handle it really well. To make sure that the children from each spouse, you know, set it up in a way so that they don't look at each other with suspicion.
Yes.
So from the financial document standpoint, what are some of the key documents to get organized and to have available?
Well, you first of all, you do need a power of attorney. You need a financial power of attorney, which is different from a medical power of attorney. The medical documents you can get at the registration desk at any hospital, but the financial documents you are going to have to work with an attorney. So you've got your powers of attorney, you've got your will, there may be end-of-life instructions, which is called a living will for organ donations, so you're going to need those set up. You also want to take a close look at beneficiary designations, because those do not go according to your will. So you may write your will and say have things go to a certain person, but your IRA beneficiary designation goes someplace else.
Or your life insurance.
Your life insurance. Yes.
And that's because those are contractual.
That's right.
Yes,
that's
those
right.
are contracts.
And you may have set up a trust and think, well, I set up a trust, everything's going to transfer that way. But not if your beneficiary designations on your retirement accounts and your life insurance policies and annuities don't reference that trust, it won't happen.
That's right.
So reviewing those beneficiary designations that you set up years and years ago and may not have observed in quite a while, it's a good idea to do that.
Yeah.
How often do you come across that, Chris, where somebody says, oh, I forgot I named so-and-so?
And a lot.
A lot.
That's the other technical term.
Yeah, often, yes.
Which frequently leads to the first technical term, a mess.
There is another form I want to mention. The Bureau of Motor Vehicles has a next of kin form, an emergency contact form. And you can get this when you renew your driver's license or renew your license plate, or you can get it online. And it's, you know, the Bureau of Motor Vehicles. It tells you if you are in an accident and you're not able to communicate, it tells the state, the patrol officers, the police, who to call. Who are your next of kin? This form was, I guess, I don't know what year it was, but it hasn't been out there very long. But there was a situation where a couple of teenagers, they were away at college. They got into a car accident and they were unconscious and they were unable to contact their family members for days.
So what's the best way to keep these documents? I mean, should you store these digitally? Should you have hard copies? I mean, how do you keep them once you've got everything together?
Well, you have to have the original signed will to file your will. So you do have to have hard copy of the documents. You just can't scan everything and put it away. But a scanned copy makes a lot of sense, but you don't want to have it all password protected if nobody knows what the password is. So I do have scanned copies of all my documents. My boys know how to find this. They get a little tired every Thanksgiving when they come over. I say, okay, now you know where everything is. But, you have to have hard copy of the will. So you're going to have a central place to keep that. I do actually use an old-fashioned safe deposit box with all it has, little tiniest little box you can get, because all I have in it is the flash drive with copies of the information and pictures of the house if the house gets blown away in a tornado. So it's not at home in my file cabinet, but I have copies in my file cabinet too.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
That really is. It's so frequently we'll have people come in and they think an estate has been closed.
Yeah.
And 2 years later comes some kind of notification, and there are companies which will, if you don't scan the unclaimed funds, there are professionals who do it.
Yes.
And you'll get a letter from these outfits saying, we found money for you and for a small fee, usually like a third of what's in there. They'll help you fill out the paperwork. So it's usually again, know what the telltale signs are. If your mom and dad, or if you find yourself getting like a 1099 from a company that, you know, you used to have shares here and now it's another unnamed company that's not familiar because the transfer agent changed, or if you see envelopes piling up at mom and dad's with unopened from these other entities, it's a good idea. And I'm not sure how you've done it, but Rebecca, in your practice, but frequently it's a good idea to have your adult children come in and sit down with a financial advisor, with mom and dad's financial advisor, just to make sure, to have that conversation of where everything is.
It's very helpful for the adult children to get acquainted with the advisors while the parents are still in control of everything, so that there's a relationship there and a trust relationship. So I do like to see that.
Rebecca, should you have one family member you put in charge of knowing where everything is at, or is it maybe a better idea to have several family members who know this?
Well, you do need to have one decision maker, but then think about what are the decisions, because you may have one family member who's very good at financial decisions, but not very good on the warm, soft, fuzzy stuff, and medical issues. You may have one family member that you think is better in touch with your point of view as far as medical issues. Funeral planning also can cause some real problems. If you think about Gone with the Wind, Gerald O'Hara was buried with the services of the Church of England, which was very offensive to him. Of course, he was gone. He had no idea this was happening. But if you have strong feelings about your faith or what you want to happen, you need to get that down in writing.
Make it known. Put it in writing.
Yes.
Yes. Some people might say that this sounds like it's an overwhelming project. How do you tell someone to get started and get their arms wrapped around the idea of doing all this?
You do want to take a little bit at a time. What I do is on a significant date, like maybe Memorial Day or maybe Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving may not be the best. Sometime when you're quiet and you have some time to yourself to put these things together. And once you've done it, you need to read it again about once a year. So, and it is, you take a little piece of it at a time and work your way through it. You may want to talk with your pastor. You may want to talk with your tax advisor, your financial advisor about different issues. Maybe if you're working with my book, I have 10 chapters, so maybe you'd take a chapter a month and work your way through it, because definitely it can be overwhelming, can be a little depressing, so you want to take a break from it. But then it's not always depressing if you're going through the personal property and thinking about, wow, you know, my parents left me this and that was such a wonderful occasion, or I got this at my wedding, that was such a wonderful occasion. So there's definitely real bright spots in this process.
Here are those baby pictures I'd forgotten about.
That's right.
Glad they didn't get thrown away.
Yes.
Well, and that's you both have brought this up several times, but that's important because you always think, oh, it's the insurance policy, it's the cash, it's the things that have some great financial value, but not necessarily.
Right.
Yeah. That's right. That's right. Sometimes it's the little things. It literally is the smaller things that are more treasured. I posted this on my Facebook page, articles about, hey, baby boomers, your kids don't want your stuff. And I showed someone, I think it was my parents' salt and pepper collection, shaker collection. They had everyone on the planet. But the fact is that those kinds of things are just stuff.
Yes.
But and you can get them anywhere. You can go back and buy them at the flea market next weekend. But that picture that they took of you, or that little card that you made for them when you were in kindergarten, it's that little scribbling that's irreplaceable.
Yeah.
That's something that it just you know, your mom and dad set that aside. It's in a stack of stuff somewhere. Before you throw the stack of stuff away, go through it. Go through it. It's a little thing, but that's it. It's a way to transfer those values, because, again, if you ask yourself, why did they save this?
Yeah, your values and your wishes, the things that you want done. We make it sound like you need to wait till your 50s, 60s, 70s before you start thinking this way. But is there a certain age where you should start working on these things?
No, there's no certain age. Accidents happen any age. And even single people sometimes think they don't need a will, but single people probably need a will more than anybody, because there's no natural spouse or, you know, for anything to go to. So at any age and any station in life, you need to think about some of these things.
It's very, very true, because if you don't have a will, then whatever state you live in has one for you.
That's right.
And it makes it harder to
transfer. It may not exactly be what you want either.
It may not be what you wanted, and it will, first of all, then it's not only the delay and the publicity, because probate is a public process, but it causes the people who have to do this to be sometimes appointed as guardians, and they have to report to the court of what's going on. So it can really place a burden on someone, especially if you don't have someone nearby.
Absolutely.
Chris and Rebecca, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're very welcome. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you.
Certified public accountant Rebecca Pace, managing member of R. Pace Tax Service, and Chris DeSimio, a financial advisor with Wells Fargo Advisors in Cincinnati. Listeners are reminded the information provided on the show is general in nature and may not apply to your personal investment situation.